This morning, the topic that I've chosen is kind of an unusual one to kick off a gospel meeting with. So let me tell you a couple of reasons why I chose to deliver this particular sermon when I did. First, I wanted to do it when our younger kids were not present, because there are going to be a couple times on the sermon I want to get pretty blunt with some things, and that prevents parents from having to answer questions perhaps a little earlier than they would like to. The second reason is, for 28 years, I have taught high school. So I preached during that time, and about 5 years ago, kind of reversed things. I had preached part-time and taught full-time, and then about 5 years ago, I reversed that, went to preaching full-time and just teaching part-time. But nonetheless, I have been around kids a great deal of my life. And the topic that we're going to deal with this morning is going to directly impact our young people. And it's a lesson that I think every church had better start talking about, if they haven't already. And so this morning, what we're going to do is to kind of get the ball rolling with a discussion on temptation just in general. But then I want to take that in a very specific and timely direction that I believe is having a tremendous impact on our young people today. And that will become apparent as we go through the sermon this morning. But let's begin, first of all, just simply by thinking about what temptation is all about. Everybody is tempted. So we could say then that temptation equally impacts all people. James tells us that. So in James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, he says, each person is tempted. So, no question about that. Each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire, and then desire conceives and gives birth to sin, and when sin is full grown, brings forth death. We understand that. And we also understand with this that the consequences equally impact all people. When you and I are led into temptation and we allow that to take us into sin, we all stand in the same position before God. And that's what Paul tells us. He says, for all have sinned and all fall short of the glory of God. So, we all are tempted. Paul tells us we all have succumbed to that temptation at some point. Therefore, we've fallen short of God's glory. But now, let's make a third point with this, that though temptation equally impacts us, and though the consequences are equal, not all temptations equally impact all people. And so simply what I mean by that is there are things that I may be tempted with that you have no problems with whatsoever. Or there may be things that you are tempted with that I have no problems with. And I could give you several illustrations of that. I have worked with young people who've become addicted to drugs. Well, that has no temptation to me. The idea of losing touch with reality, the idea of getting oneself in that position, that just has no temptation for me. Yet, what I see is for these young people that they really struggle with that. But yet there may be a temptation that I have that for them would be nothing at all. Now, why do I bring that up? Well, the danger that we find in this is that if we are not awfully careful, that leads us to a judgmental attitude. That we're going to have the feeling somewhat of, well, we just can't believe somebody's struggling with that. No good Christian would ever struggle with that. It's that very idea that Jesus warns about, and I think the best known passage in the world, don't you? When he says, judge not that you be not judged. Everybody knows that passage. The problem is, not everybody knows the context of that passage. What Jesus is talking here is not judgment in general. What he's talking about is hypocritical judgment. What the Pharisees were doing, of coming down hard on somebody but yet letting themselves off the hook. And so Jesus says, judge not that you be not judged, for with the measure you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. You ever thought about what that means? God says, okay, if that's the kind of judgment you choose, that's the kind of judgment I'm going to use on you. So if you're going to be hypercritical, If you're going to bring out every little flaw in everybody and you're going to make yourself feel so superior, He says, okay, I'm going to use that judgment on you. So God says, be very careful about that. And then He says, if you see this splinter or this speck in somebody's eye and you got this log hanging out of your own eye, don't beat the poor guy to death trying to get that speck out till you take care of your problem. Now, a splinter and a log are made out of the same thing, aren't they? It's the quantity that's the difference. So here's a brother who's having a problem, but yet in our own lives there's a glaring problem that needs to be fixed. And so Jesus says, take care of your own troubles. Then go and help your brother, who very much may be in need of your help. So we have to be very careful with that. This idea of the judgment that is there, Christ is not saying, don't help your brother. In fact, just the opposite. But He also goes on within the New Testament to say that when you do help someone who's in temptation, you do that with the spirit of love. Again, let's quote from the Apostle Paul here in the book of Galatians. Brothers, if anyone is caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, hopefully that's us, you who are spiritual, you should restore him in the spirit of gentleness. And here's that warning again, just as we saw in the Lord's words, keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law. So here's a brother who's in trouble and he's got this temptation or he's got this sin that he's involved in. And I go to him, but I go in the spirit of love, not judgment. And just as Paul brings out here, I go in that spirit of gentleness. Jude gives a very interesting picture of this. He says, sometimes you got to alter your plans here, depending on who you're dealing with. He says some people, you just snatch them right out of the fire. You got to tell them like it is, what they understand. But then he says to others, show mercy with fear. That's the gentle spirit that we show. So here's a brother who's having a problem. Here's a brother who's really tempted. Here's a sister who's having difficulty. Paul and Jude tell us, you go with love, you go with gentleness. Christ tells us you go with the Spirit to help, not to judge them unworthy or inferior to you. And when we have all of that down, then we're ready to help. We're ready to show someone how to interpret something from the Bible. With that as our backdrop, here's what I want us to focus on this morning. Those of you who are older are like me, I'm sure. 20 years ago, I could never have imagined preaching a sermon like this. The idea that homosexuality would be mainstream, that a young man thinking he's a young woman, or a young woman thinking she's a young man, or parents saying we're not going to tell a child if he's a she or she's a he, well, that was just simply unheard of. Yet, here we are. And what I want us to see today is that this is a topic that must be dealt with. And I'm glad our younger people are in here because you have an up-close and personal experience with this. My guess is if you're in a public school in particular, though, not necessarily only there, you may very well have come across a friend who maybe is having dilemmas like this, and it may be you are. And if that's the case, I am so glad you're here, and I'm so glad you're going to be able to hear what God says about that, because God does address it. And so here, as we think about our work as a local church, and as we think about a local church that's dealing with our younger people who primarily are the ones who are facing this temptation, though certainly not limited there, we've got to figure out how we're going to deal with this issue. So let's think about that this morning. When we think about the idea of sexual orientation as we're seeing it presented in the 21st century, what we're talking about is sexual deviancy. And I use that word to make a point here. Deviant simply means that it's something that's kind of going off course. So if you look at a definition of that, deviant means that you're departing from the usual or accepted standards, but note the latter part of this. Especially in social or sexual behavior. So, here's the standard. Here is the line that it ought to be. And if something is deviating, that means it's going against the norm or going away from the norm. So if we were looking for what the Bible says is the normal sexual behavior, what would that be? Well, God doesn't beat around the bush and He doesn't waste any time getting there. He says in Genesis chapter 2, here at the dawn of creation, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. We're going to address that this afternoon. But for now, let's just look at the standard that God has given. So, what happens over time? Well, if you kind of think about the norm, one man, one woman for life, all sexual activity occurring within that norm, what the Bible does is it shows us a digression away from that. And I don't want to imply here that one sin's worse than the other. But the idea is kind of this is oftentimes where it starts and leads to what we'll talk about this morning. We think about at times that we're seeing here the idea of coarse talk. And so if you look in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4, the apostle's going to warn about this. Sometimes we call this locker room talk. This is joking and using terms that are derogatory towards a man or a woman, and often within the connotations of a sexual behavior. So here's somebody we could say at this point is just all talk. Okay? That's not good. That's not good. But yet we're seeing that digression. Here God said, I want you to honor my system. Here's somebody who's kind of making fun of that. I'm saying I'm going to talk about that in a way that is unholy, unwholesome. Well, it digresses further, doesn't it? We think about Jesus in Matthew chapter 5 who warned about lust. The language there is very, very much getting our attention. You know, if you've got an eye that's causing you to sin, you pluck it out, whatever it takes. You make sure that you keep your mind focused. Well, this again is a digression. Here, it's the idea that I am not going to confine my satisfaction within the marriage relationship. I'm going to allow my mind to build all of these scenes, all of these scenarios. Here's where pornography becomes a big problem. So a young man, young woman opens up his or her phone, computer, looks at these images. Not just young, though, is it? A lot of older men deal with this problem. Addicted to it. Just like a drug. Just like alcohol. There's an addiction there that just simply a man or sometimes a woman doesn't feel like can be broken. So here's that deviancy. There's not the satisfaction with the spouse. It's seeking to find that satisfaction within the imagination, within thinking about these prurient thoughts. And many times the next step after that is going to be fornication. Not many men and women are going to be satisfied with the computer screen. Once the thought is there, the one then becomes very eager to get involved in this. And before too long, here we've got this deviation where God has said a man and a woman for life with all sexual activity in that relationship. Now you've got a man or a woman who's going about kind of like in the animal world just from partner to partner. Well, that's wrong. That's a deviance. And that can go even further in hurting a spouse, can it? That a spouse becomes unsatisfied with God's plan. And says, I'm going to go toward someone else. I'm going to involve myself with another woman. Or a woman says, I'm going to involve myself with another man. And then we get to the point of an abandonment of the whole concept that God has given. One man, one woman. Here people say, no, it can be one man and one man. Or one woman, one woman. And so here we have the whole problem of where one has said, though God has told me how I'm to behave in this way, I'm going to choose to do something different. Let me tell you, our young people are inundated with this. I don't care where they are. If you've got them in public school or a private school or you're homeschooling, I don't care where they are. They are inundated with this. Let me talk very specifically to you. As I told you, I've been teaching a very long time. I'm beginning to run out of fingers of the number of former students who are now involved in homosexual relationships. Now, let me tell you the school I teach at. The school I teach at is a private school, non-church supported, parents there primarily who are Christians, who are sending their children there in order to get quality Bible education along with their secular education. Two that I can think of right offhand of those former students are sons of gospel preachers. What I want you to see is this is not out there. This is not they. This is not them. This is us. This is impacting us, local churches of God-fearing people who take a fundamental view of the Bible, who believe that passage of one man, one woman for life. This is our children who are getting involved in these things. And we must be very, very aware of how we handle this. So, think about what a young person is hearing, and I'm going to use us for local churches here, all right? So, us. What are they hearing from us versus the world? Well, you think about us. Here's the language, as I have said this morning. This is deviant. This is not normal behavior. This is learned behavior. This is something that you're making a choice to do, and it's sin. God makes that very clear. And He emphatically put the exclamation point there, didn't He, with Sodom and Gomorrah, of what this can lead to. Yet, what do I hear from people who are not religious, or even sometimes people who are but take a very liberal attitude toward interpretation of the Scriptures? Well, here's what society is saying. That's normal. The reason you're this way is because of genetics. This is the way you were born. This is just the way your brain's wired. And it's now accepted. Interestingly, up until a few years ago, actually, society on this particular issue was on our side, wasn't it? For most people, homosexuality was viewed as a deviancy, but then, boy, in the last 10, 20 years, that has changed. And so now, to come out with a sermon like I'm preaching this morning, I've already disqualified myself from becoming President of the United States, right? Somebody will get this recording, and that'll be that. Well, I'm not worried about that. This is who I'm worried about. Our young people who are hearing these things, let me ask you, which side's easier to accept? If somebody tells you, you're okay, you don't need to change, everything's normal, and you need to be accepted, that's much easier to swallow. Then I'm really having these feelings, yet these feelings have got to be controlled. They're trying to lead me into sin. And so if we are not very careful, we're going to be a discouragement. And so let me just say it very plainly here, a local church that is not giving careful consideration to how it approaches this issue will unwittingly make society look like the more loving choice. In other words, the people who are seeking to teach the plan of God are going to look like the bad guys. We're going to look like people who are stuck in the past, who don't understand the times, and we must be very, very careful about that. So, let's talk about some very specific things you and I need to be thinking about as we consider how to approach this idea. The first of which is, we got to realize just exactly where we are. And we've got to admit that. That in 2019, we are in a situation where the things we're talking about this morning is just the way it is. Let me reiterate that our young people are absolutely inundated with this. I want to read to you just very briefly this morning. This is a few months old, but it came from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram newspaper down in Texas. It reports that a 41-question survey was part of a diversity curriculum for Black History Month. Students were instructed to rate their level of comfort with various scenarios. Now, these are sixth graders, okay, sixth graders. So they get this diversity training. This is what they're told to comment on. A friend invites you to go to a gay bar. Sixth grade, all right, sixth grade. You go to the gay bar and a person of the same sex asks you to dance. Another scenario. Your sister invites her new boyfriend home to dinner. He is a female-to-male transsexual. Your dentist is HIV positive. This one, really, is the one that threw me. You're assigned a lab partner who is a fundamentalist Christian. I want you to think about that. This in school. And so here, sixth graders are said, think about going to a gay bar. Somebody of the same gender asks you to dance. Your sister brings home a female who's transitioning into a man. Can you imagine why there's all of this confusion out there that someone, and I'm sure whoever came up with these questions was thinking, we are doing a great service. We're providing these young people with avenues of free thought. What they're doing is they're creating a terrible, terrible situation. So, it's there. Almost every TV program now has a gay couple. Every one of them is introducing this. And ones that perhaps you once enjoyed and you thought were so good, now you got to deal with that. Well, let me add to this that we're never likely to see a return to traditional values. If we think that what's going on now is just kind of a brief little thing and we'll get back to normal before too long, I'm not a prophet, and I sure pray that that can happen. But looking at the history of the world, it's highly unlikely that we're going to see this particular genie being put back into the bottle, and we go back to saying as a society that men and women are to be together, not these same-sex relationships. So there we are. Now, let me say this. And I say this with a fair amount of discomfort myself, but yet it's something we all must consider. We have got to beware of what I would just term a Victorian silence on the topic of sex amongst Christian young people. Why do I use the term Victorian? Well, if you're a student of that time period, the upper class would follow the morals of the royal family. And Victoria was a very moral person. At least she gave that appearance. Even to the point that in order that things be done decently, if you had a table in your house and you were upper class, you would make a little skirt to put on the legs of those tables so that they would not be exposed, because that might encourage women to show their legs in public. That's how serious it was. And so you just didn't talk about it. You didn't acknowledge it. That was not something in polite company that you discussed. And so I'm afraid, to a very great extent, we've kind of adopted that and we've said, well, we can't talk about that. That's nothing proper for children to be hearing at church and their Bible classes and such. Well, if that's our attitude, we're a little bit out of mainstream with the Bible. Because the Bible talks about it quite often. You ever studied the book of Song of Solomon? God is saying in Song of Solomon, here's what I want. Here's the kind of relationship that I want. I want you to see that a man and a woman are to find satisfaction with each other within this marriage relationship. And so if the Bible is not silent about it, and I certainly understand that primarily this is the work of parents, I had three painful conversations with three sons, so I am well aware of this. It's our job first, but we need reinforcements. And there needs to be lots of voices of good, solid Bible students saying, this is what God has said. And let me say, it must begin young. If we wait till our young people are 17 or 18 years of age to begin talking with them about these things, we have waited far beyond where we should. You know the age pornography usually gets started? 12. A lot of young men in particular are addicted by the age of 12. I'm now working with a man who's 27 who has been viewing porn since he was 12 years old. And I'm going to tell you, it's like trying to take a bottle of liquor away from an alcoholic. And he's trying really hard because he sees what it's doing to his marriage and he sees what it's doing to him spiritually. But I want to tell you, it's a daily struggle for that. And thus, we need to approach our children when they're very young. And here's the reason, because I can promise you the devil is going to do his work there. The devil is not going to say, oh, let's wait till he's 18. Let's wait till she's 18, then I'll get started on this. No. He's been pushing. He's been plotting. And if we do not begin when our kids are very young, it's probably going to be too late. So, our job then is to be cheerleaders. As a local church, whether you have kids or not, or maybe your kids are long gone out of the house, you need to cheerlead God's plan. You need to be someone who's talking about why this makes sense, how man and woman were created, why they were created, what God has said about all of this, and to make sure that our young people are hearing this cacophony of voices of good, godly, solid people who are making that lesson very practical to them. And we've also got to show the dangers of the devil's plan. At the fear of sounding hostile, at the fear of sounding like we're out of the mainstream socially, which we are, we got to say what's right and we got to say what's wrong. And I don't care what kind of threats are made against us. If the local paper writes you up, let the local paper write you up. If the local news station comes to do a report on this church that's taking such a backward view, let them do it. We do not compromise. We don't compromise. We don't tell people something's okay that's not. Think about what Ezekiel told the people of his day. He says, but when you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, that person shall die in his iniquity, but you've delivered your soul. We've done our work. But hopefully it'll be a better situation than this. So, here we are. Our kids are being attacked very early. Those of you who are older may remember this. Early 1990s. Our younger people in the room, no concept of that, right? Weren't even around. Early 1990s in New York, a school district added a book to their curriculum called Heather Has Two Mommies. Anybody remember that? You remember what you thought of? That is so weird. Now that is so strange. Can't believe somebody would do that. Probably then kind of dropped it because nothing would ever come of it, right? Yet here we are. So, we start teaching. We teach young. We teach what God has said about sex. We teach what God has said about man and woman. We teach what God has said about marriage. We've done our job. We've shown what God desires. Let me say this. We've also got to foster an atmosphere where temptations are discussed. Now we get to the hard part. There may very well be a young person either in this group now or one that's maybe young and will be up teenage years before too long, or maybe somebody who will move in who's going to question, why am I feeling this way? Why am I attracted to someone of the same sex? We've got to have the kind of atmosphere where that can be discussed. That's what James tells us, right? Prayer of faith will save the one who is sick. The Lord will raise him up. If he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous man has great power. It's working. Now, ideally, this is going to be the elders. Where a young person goes to the elders and says, I'm having these thoughts. But most young people I know are not going to be real comfortable going into a room of middle-aged and older men to discuss something like this. And so here in a minute we'll talk about where the rest of us come in with that, though I am a middle-aged or older male, I realize that. Now, when we think about the confession of this, what it means is that each of us is going to have an opportunity. And it may be that there's someone with whom I'm close to. Young person, maybe know, we just hit it off. Same personality, same interest, whatever. You've got a young person that, you know, you've just really seen grow up and you're just really close to. That young person may need you. Because homosexuality is often resulting from these feelings of confusion. And here's one thing every young person needs to understand. Because a thought comes through your head of some kind of interest in a same-sex relationship, that does not mean you're homosexual. It may mean you're curious. It may mean you've heard this stuff and it's, you know, you're kind of wondering about it, but it doesn't mean you're gay. Yet I'm afraid what we're hearing from media is that if you feel this way at any point in your life, that's showing you that's how your brain's wired, and so you need to go with that. No, you need to have somebody else who's saying that may not just be the case. So, when these times of confusion come, somebody is going to give guidance. Now, you can make the choice of who that's going to be. Are you going to allow Oprah? Are you going to allow Ellen DeGeneres? Are you going to allow the primetime programming on television? Because they will give the guidance. They're glad to do that. And they'll be glad to show how that this is normal and good and satisfying. Or you can step up to the plate. And you can say, no. That while you're hearing this, let's look at the one who created heaven and earth and men and women and see what His plan is. So, when we consider that, I think it puts on us this onus to make sure that we're not playing catch up on this. We're in front of it. We're helping our young people who are struggling with this. Maybe before they're even willing to admit it to anybody, they're hearing something that's an alternate view of all of this that's being fed through the media. Now, this is where you and I come in. We've got to be ready. And I'm all in favor of older Christians working hard to develop strong, godly relationships with younger Christians. They're not going to come to you, though. Now, you may have a few. But most of the time, that's not the case. You're going to have to foster the relationship. And so it's up to you and I to become these figures of people who are trustworthy, who can keep a confidence, who can help, who can maybe foster the telling of a parent that a child is struggling with this and needs help with it. That's where we come in. Now, is that my favorite role in life? It certainly is not. Is it one of the most necessary? It absolutely is. And thus, I've got to be willing to do that. And so here is where I'm going to tell them, this is the way it is. Because I love God, and I want you to love God. And that's got to motivate us in our every action. The things I choose to do must always flow from this. And therefore, I never soften sin. Never soften sin. Never ignore it. I don't tell a young person, well, that's okay. You know, if you feel that way, that's okay. I never do that. But on the other hand, I also am never going to abandon someone in trouble. I want to talk very specifically here to our younger people. I've been talking a lot to our older folks. But you may be in the trenches with somebody. What if you have a friend who says to you, I think I'm gay? Probably some here have had that, would be my guess. What are you going to do? You're going to abandon them? You're going to say, oh, well, if you're going to be that way, you are no friend of mine because I'm a godly person and evil companions corrupt good morals and I can have nothing to do with you. Careful. If you feel like that person's going to be a terrible influence on you, then maybe we've got some things to think about along that line. But if you can be the strong one to say, well, I understand, but let's figure out a way how we're going to deal with this in a godlike fashion. That's what we do. We don't abandon this sin. We don't abandon people who are being tempted with this sin. Because we think about what we started the lesson with. You and I have things that we're tempted with that are just as ugly in the eyes of God. I'll tell you what. Pornography, lying, gossiping. They're all in the same basket, aren't they, with homosexuality? They're all digressions from the plan of God. So if here's a young person who is needing our help, we don't turn away. We don't shun that person. We make sure that we're illustrating the love of God. Because it's our job to show that right can prevail. You can get over this. Want me to prove it? Paul wrote to the Corinthians, "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers. They will not inherit the kingdom of God. But such were some of you." There were some former homosexuals in the church at Corinth. I currently worship with a man who is a former homosexual. Left his wife for a man. Destroyed his relationship with his son. He is a Christian when he did all of that. Came to his senses one day. And he's been living a life where he's serving God, understanding that because of his past, he must stay by himself. But he's doing this very thing. And you and I can as well. But that may mean that we've got to have faithful Christians helping us to develop the strategies that we need. And so let me leave you this morning with a thought. As a congregation, you need to be thinking about how you're going to do this. You need to be thinking about what you're going to incorporate into these Bible studies that you're doing with your young people, the sermons that are being presented, the discussions that are being had. Do it because it's there. That's where we live. And we must make sure we're doing everything to show that God's plan is the right way. Because let's remember, we've all sinned. And aren't we happy somebody helped us out of that? Let's be that same kind of person. Thank you so much for your good attention this morning.